My name's Tamsin Westhorpe, and welcome to Fresh from the Pod. Now, my next guest is just so full of energy. It's unbelievable. You won't find anyone that packs as so much into their day as Dr. Amir Khan. He's a full-time GP, passionate gardener. He's also a regular guest on shows such as Lorraine and This Morning. And he's written a book, The Doctor Will See You Now. So I'm really excited to talk to him about that. But more importantly, we are going to talk about exercising in the garden and how gardening, conversation and social interaction are so good for our health and incredibly valuable. Now, this interview was done in May, so some of these statistics and figures that he's talking about for coronavirus will be different now. Dr. Amir Khan, it's so exciting to have you on Fresh from the Pod.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited. I'm so pleased you asked. Thank you.
Well, I spotted you at the beginning of lockdown on Twitter, running around your garden madly. And I thought, this is my kind of man, you know, someone that's using the garden for fun. And this will entertain you. I showed it to my son, who's 14, and he's a health fanatic. And I came home from a dog walk and he'd set up an outside gym with health forms to fill in. With things like, what do you want to achieve, Mum? What would you like to look like? And I then had to listen to a sort of motivational speaker and then do several sit-ups. So I blame you for that.
I will happily take that. It is good. It's good to exercise. That's the thing. You know, the gardens are at the moment, they're looking absolutely stunning. And it's just so nice to be able to do other things in them rather than just kind of sit down and eat. It's nice to use the space for exercise, which I've not done before. You know, before the lockdown, I was always going to the gym or going for a run outside. So it's lovely to do that. And that run around the garden you mentioned actually is what I call my weekly victory lap. I'm an NHS GP. I work full time, and part of what I do is see patients with potential coronavirus, and we see these in places called red zones, which are designated GP surgeries that only potential coronavirus patients can come to. Everyone else goes to a different building. So as much as everyone else, I've been really worried about getting the virus and bringing it home to my family. So every Friday, I'm just really grateful to be healthy. And rather than, you know, it's a very serious thing and it's affected so many people in an awful way, but I just do a victory lap around the garden to celebrate, be thankful, and also lift the mood a little bit. And it's now turned into like a victory dance, and I'm running out of dances to do, to be honest.
I think it was today's dance that was pretty good. I thought, this man's got some moves. It's getting, you're beyond strictly dancing, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not sure. I don't think I'll be getting that call, but I'm enjoying it, and people seem to be enjoying it as well. So it's nice, and it's nice to get outside.
So you are a passionate gardener. You've just told me that you've sprayed yourself with water before the podcast, watering the garden.
Yes.
And obviously, I'm an incredibly passionate gardener, and I've been thrilled to see people turning to their gardens. What do you think that the garden has given people during this time?
Well, I think those of us who are lucky enough to have gardens during lockdown, you know, we have been able to go outside and enjoy that space so much more. And you know, when our outdoor activities are restricted, like they have been over the last few months, and we've only been able to go out for an hour, but we can actually spend unlimited time in our gardens. The benefit to our mental health is so much to it. We've been lucky enough to have lovely weather as well. So going out in the sunshine has been amazing for your mental health, for your vitamin D, for your immune system, for your sleep cycles, but also, you know, tending to the garden is physical exercise. We know that being in green spaces is really good for your healing as well. People have been shown to heal better when they have views of outdoor green spaces. And that all relates to this whole lockdown experience. It's been very stressful for a lot of people. It's been a very negative experience for a lot of people. But the gardens and nature in the garden in particular has been, you know, it's certainly been my savior. And I imagine it's the same for a lot of people out there.
So your daily routine, I mean, I cannot believe you're sort of a superman to me, the things that you cram into a day. So you're cooking, you're gardening, you're dancing, you're looking after your wonderful Mama Khan. You're not going into a hospital or GP surgery every day, are you? You're doing lots of Zoom talks,
yes.
I would imagine.
So my working week has changed quite dramatically. So we kind of split it up into three blocks. So most of the time I'm working from home. So I'll be doing video consultations and phone consultations with patients from home. And that's to minimize the number of people at the surgery. But at least twice a week, I will go into the surgery and be on call, which is managing any urgent or emergency patients that need to be seen. And then once a fortnight or so, I will go to a red zone, which is, like I say, it's not just for our surgery, but it's for surgeries around where I work. And they refer any patients that might have symptoms consistent with the coronavirus. And over there, you know, it's just me and a receptionist to minimize kind of contact, and I will be seeing those patients. And at the same time, I'm still doing house calls, so I'm still going out to nursing homes and elderly and housebound patients. So I'm still doing all of that in between all of this. So I'm not really any less busy. I'm just working in different ways. And it's been interesting. I do miss the old ways. I miss my patients, to be fair. I miss that kind of face-to-face contact I have with the patients. And certainly, you know, my regulars, I'm still speaking to them, but I'm not seeing them as much. But no, it's been an unusual time. It's been at times very scary, particularly the first time I went to one of the red zones. It was very early on in the pandemic, and we were just hearing about healthcare workers dying from the virus, and the hub was set up, and they were looking for volunteers to man it in the first week, because as you can imagine, there was a lot of reluctance. And I went on the second day it opened up, and I remember that drive in actually, and it's a bit of a strange experience, because you kind of go in thinking, okay, yep, so I'm going to see people with this condition that I could potentially catch very, very easily. But at the same time, there's this whole rhetoric around in the news about NHS workers and key workers being heroes and warriors and angels. And so you're really embarrassed about being scared. And that was the overwhelming feeling I had driving in, being scared, but being embarrassed about being scared. And that kind of stayed with me for a few days until I spoke to someone about it. One of my colleagues, and it was just reassuring to know that she felt exactly the same as I did. And actually, you know, over time that fear dissipates, and I've been there so many times now, but you just kind of get used to it, and it becomes part of your normal working week. But it was a very, very strange experience to begin with, and nothing like I've been a GP now for 10 years, I've been a doctor for 15 years, and I've never experienced anything like that before.
I mean, I think that's really important to stress that, you know, people like me who are fortunate enough just to be gardening and not really at risk, it's really good to hear that, you know, you do have the right to be scared. And gosh, people have done some incredible things. So when you get home from your stressful day, do you drive to the Yorkshire Moors? You've showed lovely pictures on your social media.
I live very close to it was just Ilkley Moor, actually. So I live very close to there. So I'm lucky enough to live on the outskirts of a village, and it's very rural. So I have the Yorkshire Moors on one side, I've got some parks and reservoirs on my other side. So I go for a run. I'm one of those very annoying people who wake up really early. So I get up about 4:30, and then really? I go for a run. I know, which is beautiful now because the sun is coming up, and I get videos of sunrise over beautiful moorlands and all of this kind of stuff. In the winter, it's horrendous because it's freezing, usually lashing down with rain, and the last thing you want to do is go for a run. But I make myself go, and it's great for my mental health. Like you say, I have a very, very busy day. And you see some amazing stuff. You know, I see deer, I see badger, I see, you know, rabbits, everything that I used to see in books when I was a kid, because we lived in an inner city kind of, we lived in Bradford, we were very much in the center of Bradford. And so all these things I used to see in books, I'm now seeing in real life. So I feel like I've finally arrived at this place that I've always wanted to be.
But I think that's true of a lot of people that are exercising in a different way, looking at things in a different way. Do you think that people are going to be fitter generally after the lockdown? What, I mean, you're seeing patients. Do you think there's more of us taking more care of ourselves? What's the sort of feeling?
Yeah, I wish I could say yes, but I don't think it's true, because I'm a GP with a special interest in diabetes, so particularly type 2 diabetes, and I look after a lot of patients with poorly controlled diabetes, and I've been phoning them up recently. I normally see them every couple of months or so, but I've been phoning them up. And, you know, one of the questions I always ask them is how active they are. And they aren't, I think, because of the restrictions and because a lot of these people are at risk of getting the virus and becoming very unwell, they've stayed inside. So the people who have tended to go outside are not necessarily the people with long-term conditions. So they may well be getting fitter, but there's a whole cohort of people with cardiovascular disease, diabetes, high-risk people who are probably getting unfitter rather than fitter, and that will have long-term consequences on their health, and we'll have to deal with that when it comes. And the flip side is, you know, gyms are closed and it's great to be outside, but I think there's going to be a cohort of people who are used to exercising indoors at gyms who will be feeling unfitter as well. But definitely there is a cohort of people who will be going outdoors more than normal, who'll be seeing things that they've never seen before. I'm having conversations with my patients who are able to go outside and are active about the things that they've seen, and only a small part of my consultation actually involves a medical kind of condition now. Most of it involves around what we've seen in my garden. I had an incident actually last week. I tweeted about it, because I've moved my office downstairs into our snug, which opens out into the garden, and I've got hundreds of bird feeders in my garden, and a starling flew in while I was on a video consultation with a patient, and it just kind of was flying around, so I had to scramble to close the door so it wouldn't go anywhere else into the house, but at the same time try and chase it out. And this patient was just watching me chase this starling around the room. I fell over a chair. I think that panicked the starling more, and it eventually did fly out, and it was highly amusing but highly embarrassing as well.
Yeah, you probably cheered up your patient no end, I'm sure.
Yes, he was laughing. He was definitely laughing.
Excellent. Now, explain what your garden's like. I mean, I've seen it on Twitter. You've got a lovely lawn with very clear that you can do your wonderful jig around. Mm. What's your sort of favourite aspects of your garden?
You know what I've done this year, which has been really exciting. So I've lived in this house now for about 4 years, and we've completely revamped the garden. I must say, you know, I've not had very much experience in gardening before, but I do all of it myself, and it's been such an amazing kind of 4 years to get the garden to where it is. But you know where it is now. But over the last 4 years, each year it's been gorgeous. So my favorite thing this year, because I've run out of gardening space, I just plant and plant and plant and squeeze things into the tiniest gaps. And I know that's not the right thing to do, but I just see things at the garden center and, oh, I must have one of them.
I want it.
Yes. So I squeeze it. So I've completely run out of border space. And so now this year I've been planting in pots, and I've been putting pots all around my garden, and that has actually lifted the garden to a whole new level, I think, because it's given it a bit of a kind of a cottage vibe. So I've got things in pots that I would never have put in pots, but I'm doing really well. I've got foxgloves in pots, and I've got lupins in pots. I've got a massive banana plant in a pot as well, and it, you know, things are doing really, really well in those pots, and it's just added another layer to the garden and put plants and flowers in places where there weren't plants and flowers. And I've got a couple of chimneys as well that I've put ferns in, which are looking really, really smart. So I'm really pleased about them as well.
But the interesting thing is, I think we've all gone pot mad, but you see, normally a lot of us would be going away for 2 weeks or something in the summer, and you'd have your pots to worry about. And we don't have to worry now. We're there to water them. Yeah. We're there to dote on our garden. So that's...
Yes, and it's so nice that people have connected with gardens and gardening, and not just the plants, but all the animals that come into the garden as well. We're very lucky to have nature, you know, come into the garden. We do encourage it. You know, we put out lots and lots of food for the birds. At the moment, like I mentioned, the starling, we are overrun with starlings, but I don't mind because they're sweet and they're on the decline, so we've got to help them. And we've got lots of bullfinches around as well, which are looking stunning in the sun. And we get the pond, I'm very excited about. We've had more frogs in the pond this year than ever before. And we get hedgehogs as well in the evening, and bats flying overhead. So it's just been a really, that day when I come back from a stressful day at work, the first thing I do, rather than go into the front door, is go round the house into the back garden and just kind of survey it to make sure everyone's happy and everything's happy. And then I can go inside and make sure all the bird feeders are full, because I can't bear the thought of a bird arriving at a feeder and it being empty.
So would you happily say that your garden sort of got you through this? Or help you get through
this? Yeah, 100%. I really, really would. You know, that kind of just going out there, being, you know, in that space at that moment and not thinking about anything else apart from that particular plant or that particular flower or that particular area of the garden. You know, really, really just nature and gardening has got me through. And I've got this story, really, and it's not necessarily about the garden, but it's about nature. It's when I went on a home visit to a nursing home, and there was a patient there who I'd been looking after for years and years and years. And unfortunately, he'd tested positive for the coronavirus, and he was very unwell. And I had to have a conversation with his wife about, you know, that he probably isn't going to make it over the next 24, 48 hours. And that conversation I would normally have in the surgery, or she would meet me in the nursing home, but I had to do it over the phone. And it was just really just not a nice conversation to have over the phone. And I remember sitting in my car outside the nursing home afterwards, because I rang her when I got into my car, and I put the phone down, and I was really upset, both for her, for the way I'd had that conversation with her, for the patient as well, because like I say, I'd known him for ages. And it was a really overwhelming feeling. And then out of nowhere, a robin flew onto the bonnet of my car, and it just kind of pulled me out of my thoughts, and I just watched it, and it flew into a hedge, and my gaze kind of followed it, and it was building a nest in there. And just for those kind of couple of minutes as I watched it go back and forth, I just didn't think about what had just happened. And that is the same feeling I get when I go into the garden every evening. You know, it just kind of almost like washes me clean of the stress, yeah, and all the anxieties of the day, which I imagine is the same for a lot of people.
Yeah, that's a lovely story. Good old Robin coming to the rescue.
Absolutely.
So you grew up, did you have a garden if you grew up in the city? Were you in Bradford, were you?
I was. So we lived in the centre of Bradford. We were a really big family. I've got six sisters and obviously a mum and dad. And we lived in a two-bedroom house, and we didn't have a garden. We had a backyard, which was very much kind of concrete, and we didn't have a garden. And I didn't really know much about gardens or gardening then. And it wasn't anything that we were kind of encouraged to pursue. But I remember going to visit friends' houses at school. You know, I was lucky enough, actually, when I was 11 years old, I was lucky enough to get a scholarship, a creative writing scholarship, to a grammar school. And I went to, it was Bradford Grammar School. I went to Bradford Grammar School, and I used to go to my friends' houses, and they all had massive gardens, and it was just incredible. And I think kind of looking at their gardens and you know, what we used to play outside in them, and it was really bizarre, because when they came to our house, we played out on the street, which was normal and it was just fine. But when we went to their house, it was playing out in the garden, and it just felt different. As again, I mentioned looking at books and stuff. I remember looking at books and thinking, gosh, these plants, these animals, you know, that people have got them in their actual garden. I couldn't quite believe it. It felt like something from a fairy tale. So when I went to medical school and then qualified and came back to Yorkshire and bought a house, and I purposely bought a house with a garden that I could do something with. It's not a huge garden by any stretch of the imagination, but it's workable. You know, we really transformed it into somewhere where we'd enjoy sitting, because it's that balance of getting a really pretty garden, but at the same time being wildlife friendly. And I know there's a real drive to try and let things overgrow and enjoy it and all that kind of stuff. But I think people want to get a balance, because we want to enjoy the nature side of the garden. I've certainly got areas of the garden where I just let grow wild, but there's other bits which are very manicured and looking really nice. So I try and strike that balance. And I think having that drive to have a garden all those years has really paid off now.
But I think you're right. You can't just let it go. You do need to get that right. But you have become an ambassador for the Wildlife Trust.
Yes. Yes, I have. I've been an ambassador now for about 2 years. And what I like about the Wildlife Trust, it's a charity, really, that encourages people to enjoy green spaces and get the benefits out of green spaces. And in turn, they are then encouraged to conserve these green spaces and nature within them. And what I wanted to do, I mean, I've just told my story there a little bit about growing up without kind of access to all of that. But what I like to do, particularly with the Wildlife Trust, is to improve access to green spaces to people from poorer socioeconomic backgrounds, and children and young people who don't really you know, get the benefits of green spaces. And it's hard for people to know that. If you've got a garden, you take it for granted almost. You know, when I started tweeting about gardening and gardens, particularly during lockdown, I had a lot of people feedback going, well, we don't have gardens. It's not fair. And that you know, you're getting all these benefits and we're not. And I completely understand that. So I was really pleased when parks were opened again to the general public. I know that's a risk as well, but the benefits are immense. And that's what the Wildlife Trust is all about, is all about kind of accessing green spaces and conserving green spaces for people's health. And I was really keen to be an ambassador for them as a result of that.
I think it is the time. People have realised, and the number of times I've spoke to fellow gardeners that have said, oh, imagine being in an apartment without a garden. So I think we've really thought about people. Mm. And when you do have a garden, you do feel slightly guilty. But if you can share it in any way, that also gives people quite a lot of hope, doesn't it? I mean, I've had people come back to me and say, oh, I'm loving your little videos. They're just, it's lovely to see beautiful flowers and things. So
yeah, you're absolutely right. I would agree. So, you know, at the same time as people saying, oh, we don't have gardens, I had lots and lots of people who were shielding in the lockdown who said, you know, we look forward to your photographs and videos because we can't go out. So again, you get both sides of that. And, you know, if you don't have a garden, I know lots of people say this, if you have a balcony, you can put pots out on the balcony. If you don't have a balcony, you know, you can put a window box on the inside of a window as well and have wildflowers or plants growing there. You will still get some health benefit from even a small pot on the inside of your windowsill.
I want to go back to the fact that you've got six sisters. How on earth? What a childhood that must have been. Are you the youngest, the oldest? Whereabouts are you?
I've got one younger sister. I think my parents tried to try again. But no, I've got six sisters. And they really vary in age groups. You know, my eldest sister is a good 15 years older than me. We grew up fairly poor. And my mum, you know, she came to this country, she couldn't speak English, but we had a lovely neighbour who taught her how to speak English and write in English. And she became a cleaner, and then she worked in a school, and then she became a social worker, and then she ended up running a department in social services in Bradford. And it was amazing. My dad was a bus driver. He sadly passed away when we were younger. So it was really my mum and my sisters and myself. It was strange because there were so many of us. It was almost like we had groups. So the elder ones would hang out together and the younger ones would hang out together. The older ones had to look after us a lot when my mum was at work. And so, yeah, it was, everybody always asked me whether I was spoiled as the only kind of boy. And everyone asked my mum that as well. But it's not, I don't think it's true. I think it went really the other way. You know, my mum really kind of instilled in me kind of like, you know, there's no difference between men and women. You'll still be doing your share of the hoovering and the washing up and all of this kind of stuff and the mopping. But at the same time, I think my sisters took advantage, because whenever there was anything that needed to be done, like using any kind of power tools, they were like, well, get Amir to do it. He's the boy, he can do it. So it was kind of, you get the both ends
get
of it.
Both angles. But I do love it when you mention her on Twitter, you know, that she's told you to come and mow the lawn. She doesn't seem to let you off the hook very often, does
no,
she?
No. Well, my mum is a very, I mean, like I say, you know, she's worked really hard, and there's seven of us that she's brought up, and she's a very kind of bossy but quite endearing Asian lady. And she doesn't take any nonsense from anyone, not from anyone either, in or out of the household. And I think that comes from being a social worker, really, because she used to be a social worker for children and families. So she used to deal with a lot of dysfunctional families. And often you have to kind of stand your ground with a lot of that kind of stuff. And I think it kind of stems back from that. But she's constantly got all of us on the go. Doing jobs for her, because she's been shielding as well, so we've been having to drop groceries off and all of this kind of stuff, and she's got a garden now, and she's got a gardener, but obviously the gardener can't come around because of the coronavirus, and so she, you know, every time I drop the groceries off, she went, oh well, since you're here, just bring your lawnmower or bring the hedge trimmer. And so her garden's looking nicer than mine because I've spent so much time over there looking after it. And she gives me instructions through like a window. She opens it like a fraction and she goes, you haven't cut that hedge straight enough. You've missed a bit over there. Or,
but do you think part of that is her wanting to see you out of the window?
Definitely. Part of it is, and also it is part of it, is her wanting the perfect hedge so her neighbours can be envious of it. I'm pretty sure that's 90% of what it is.
That's hilarious. So, I mean, now we are out of the lockdown is moving forward. We have decided as a family not to open the garden at the moment because we're, to be honest, we're edgy about it. And we're thinking, can we provide everything that we need to provide? It's quite frightening deciding not to open something equally because you don't want to be seen to sort of not jump in with everybody else. But it's definitely a challenging time, isn't it? Especially for you, because anything can happen now. You're probably thinking, well, are we going to be rushed off our feet again? Or
Definitely. I think you've done the right thing by not opening your garden. You know, be cautious about it and you know, an extra 2 or 3 weeks to see where we stand with the potential second wave, whether it comes or not, is a good idea. We're expecting to get busier, both with non-coronavirus related stuff, because a lot of that has been kind of on hold and patients have been holding on to symptoms and perhaps now they'll be coming to see us about it. But at the same time, if we do get a second wave, we're going to see you know, a lot more patients in our red hubs as well. So we are bracing ourselves for a big kind of surge in patients wanting to see us. But at the same time, we're also very worried about our staff because if one of our staff members gets it, potentially, you know, if we've been in contact with them for more than 15 minutes, as the rules suggest, we would then have to self-isolate as well. So you know, it has wider implications for staff and patients.
Crikey, what a challenging time. But amongst all this, you've written a book.
Oh, I have, yes. Oh, I forgot about my book. Yes, I've written a book. It's called, so I started writing it last year, and it's called The Doctor Will See You Now. And it kind of charts a lot of the stories I've come across over the last 15 years, both in hospital and as a GP. Obviously, we have to change a lot of the details for confidentiality, but we have got consent from patients as well for some of the stories that, you know, we're really, really strong. And it's kind of I started off writing what I thought would be a very light-hearted book, and it's got some very funny stories in there, because those are the kind of stories you remember. But as I delve deeper and wrote for longer, there was so much kind of emotional stuff coming out, some of the tragic stuff that I've seen, but also, you know, the relationships with my colleagues as well, because you go through so much together in the NHS and you build and forge these relationships and friendships. And the kind of things that happen outside of work in the NHS as well. It's not quite Holby City level outside of work.
Not quite that dramatic.
No. But it's good fun. And then with the whole coronavirus thing, I felt like I had to write something about what that experience was like from a GP's point of view as well. So we do go into that, but the end of the book is very, you know, it ends on a very happy note because there's a story that runs all the way through and it ends hopefully quite well. And I really hope people like it because what I find about general practice is, you know, you get to know these patients over time. I've worked at the same surgery for 10 years and you get to know these patients. And it's when you go and see them at home or whether they come and see you, it might be the only time in the whole day where their veneer of their outward personality comes down and you see the real version of them. And that's particularly true for home visits. You know, when you go on house calls and people are feeling really unwell, they're at their most vulnerable and you see what it's really like to be that person and to be unwell, what it's like to live with an illness. And I'm hoping that I've captured some of those feelings, but it's not all like that. Honestly, there's funny stories about cats coming into the surgery. There's funny stories all peppered throughout the book. So yes, it's available now and it'll be out. It's available now to pre-order, and it'll be out fully in August this year.
That's so exciting. But how did you write that? Did you sit down every night or did you sort of think, I'm in the mood to write a bit? What was your writing style? Did you sit in the garden or sit in bed late at night with a glass of wine.
No, I'm very easily distracted. So I think if I sat in the garden, I wouldn't be able to focus. I had this really strange, I've got an office upstairs in my house and I had to turn to off all the lights. And the only light was the glare off the computer, and I had to remain completely focused. And the only time I had to write, because I spend all day writing, so I couldn't do it during the working week, so I would do it only on the weekends. But I was really surprised at how kind of quickly things flowed out of me. And because I'm writing about my own experiences, you're not having to research anything or anything like that because you've gone through them. So it came out fairly easily, if I'm being honest. I know there'll be writers there going, but it felt so cathartic. It felt, and I've read it back several times and I can't believe I've actually written it, because I'm thinking, God, am I able to write something like that? That's good
brilliant
stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I'm an absolute genius. Has your mother read it yet?
No, God, no. Because, she will read it when the book comes out, but I haven't given her any previews because my mum and I, we have a really close relationship, but there's certain things that we don't talk about, and some, really personal things. And there's some very personal things in the book. And some of the stuff we as medics, you deal with, gynecological conditions, men's health conditions all the time. But some of the conversations around those things, can be quite funny when a patient comes in and we're going round in circles and doing a bit of this delicate dance to try and get to the problem. And I don't know if my mum really thinks I deal with any of that stuff. I think she still thinks I'm a little boy, and I go to work and just listen to people's chests or look in their mouths and ears. So
stick a plaster on.
Yes, pretty much. So I'm bracing myself for her opinion. Really, yes. We'll see.
Brilliant. But I mean, I think it's really interesting that you've become well known. You've done some TV. You've been on Behind Closed Doors, haven't you? How long ago was that?
So GPs Behind Closed Doors it'll be 2 years ago in August.
Really?
But it ran for a whole year, which is why it probably doesn't feel that long ago. And if anyone hasn't seen it, it's a program that comes on Channel 5, and it literally is just filming GP consultations and kind of the things that go in and around that, as well as some of the conversations we have with our colleagues. I was very lucky. It did really, really well. And people really took to our surgery. And I think that was really nice, because I feel like we have a really special surgery. We all get on. We all see each other socially when we were able to, we holiday together and all of this kind of stuff. So we've got a really good working relationship and social relationship outside of work. And I think that came across in this. And then from on the back of that, I've been really lucky. I didn't plan to do anything media wise. I always just wanted to be a GP, and I was quite happy with that. But then I kind of had a conversation with myself when people started asking me to do other things, and I just thought, you know what, Amir, you're not going to get these opportunities again. Just say yes to everything, and then we can work around it. And that's what I've done. It's been a lot of work. And I've done other shows since then on television and the writing and on radio and social media my ethos really is don't say no to anything, because opportunities are rare, particularly and I think this goes back to me coming from a working class background. You've got to make the most of every opportunity. They don't often come to certain people. So I'm hugely grateful. I feel massively lucky for everything I've done. If anyone's thinking about it, just don't say no to anything. It works.
Do you find that being stopped in the street, you being stopped at work, and all the famous doctor, is that happening to you yet?
Well, what usually happens is I've either gone for a really long run, when I used to go to the gym, and then I think, all right, before I go home, I'll just stop in Morrison's and I'll get a pint of milk and take that back with me. And I'm looking horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And that is when people will come up to me and go, are you? And they look at me and go, no, no, you're not, no. And they kind of like grimace a little bit and walk away. So that is the only time I tend to get picture. My patients, they've known me for years and years and years. So it's no different to them. They might just drop into conversation that they saw me on Lorraine or on This Morning, but that isn't really a big part of the consultation. Like I say, it's normally when you're looking your worst is when people will come up to you and say, oh, I recognize you from today. I often get mistaken for Dr. Range as well. That's another thing. So my delivery man from Amazon, he thought I was Dr. Range, and he took a picture of me and sent it to his wife and said, I've just met Dr. Range. I didn't bother correcting him. No, I just let him do it.
Don't ruin his moment. But no. Do you find, like, when you're in the supermarket and you've got a trolley of food and drink, for example, and you meet someone that knows who you are, do you think, oh my goodness, are you trying to cover up what you're eating, or are you a really healthy eater? Do you feel under pressure to live this perfect, you know, healthy lifestyle?
To be fair, I'm healthy in the terms of I exercise a lot. I go for a run every morning, and I go to the gym when I can. But my diet, I like to enjoy food. So I enjoy baking. I eat a lot of cake. Yes, I do eat fruit and veg, but at the same time, if I'm in work and the patient has bought in a box of chocolates, I will always mean to give them to reception. But by the time I get round to giving them to reception, there's only like the bounties left.
Poor old bounties. I've got a fridge with bounties in. You know, we had a big mixed bag of celebrations, and they're sitting there all lonely.
I know. My mum likes bounties. I normally just go and give them to her when it's all done. But yeah, no, I don't feel pressure. And I don't think anybody should, really. I know there's lots of people there out there promoting health and healthy diets, and that's really, really important. But you've got to enjoy life, and you've got to, and if people saw my shopping trolley, I think they'd be horrified, because there's a lot of cakes, there's a lot of biscuits, but there's also a balance of fruit and veg in there too. So. No, I don't. There's often frozen pizza. And that is the aisle they normally find me on. I always think, well, if you're on this aisle and I'm on this aisle, we're on the same page.
Exactly. Don't you judge me.
Yes, definitely.
I love it. But I think what you've done over lockdown, and by putting yourself out there, which isn't, an easy decision to sort of share your life with people, is that you've made people think, well, the GP's not that scary. Because I must admit, it's a bit like, if you come across a policeman, you think, oh my goodness, but you are a normal person with feelings, and I think that's what comes across.
Yeah.
And I think when people are being looked after by people like yourselves, it's not a walk in the park for you. You are human.
Yeah, definitely. And I think whenever this old kind of fashion relationship of a doctor and a patient and a bit of a hierarchy, I think really needs to go away. I train GPs. I've been training GPs for about 8 years now. And one of the conversations I always give them is, when that patient comes into the room, it is their 10 minutes, it's not your 10 minutes, and it's up to them what they want to get out of it. And it's really important that they're in charge and you're not in charge. And often I will say to patients, when I feel that there might be a bit of an imbalance, I'll say to them, you're the boss here. You tell me, what would you like? And we'll try and discuss all of that kind of stuff. And that's really, really important because now, more than anything, patients find it difficult enough, first of all, to get an appointment to see their doctor, but secondly, to then try and talk about what they want to talk about. And it's really important that they have a good relationship, which is why, for me, it's important that I stay in the same practice for years, A, because I love working there. But secondly, for patients to have that continuity of care and that old-fashioned kind of family doctor. I think we're losing that a little bit in general practice as GPs move around surgeries or locum in places. The reason I went into general practice is because I want to be a family doctor. I want to get to know families. I want to have those conversations with kind of teenagers and say, I remember when you were just a bump in your mum's stomach.
But, like, call the midwife.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to be like every cliche going as I get older. Honestly, I am.
Brilliant. I love it. Yes. And scooting back to gardening, have you prescribed gardening yet? Would you? Are you telling people to garden?
Yes, I definitely am, you know, both gardening and going outdoors. So particularly with the older age group of people, you know, they who are feeling lonely, I definitely tell them to garden and with younger people as well. And what it does, it opens up a whole different angle of the consultation. You know, they're expecting me to give them a pill to make them better, but often pills don't make people better, and conversations and social interactions make people better. And that's where gardening comes in. And I think, because I did a piece last year for ITV, and it was called The Veg Patch Diaries, and I was growing vegetables in an ITV garden outside, just in Leeds. And you know, I was very clear that, you know, I'm not a gardener. I've grown vegetables, but I'm hoping it'll turn out all right. And it turned out beautifully. And so a lot of the conversations I have with my patients now is, you know, how are the vegetables? How's your garden? And they ask me the same questions. And it's a really nice kind of interaction. And I'm definitely prescribing gardening for people with mental health issues. It's not a quick fix, but it will be part of the solution. People with joint problems, arthritis, who really, you know, movement is good. People with chronic fatigue syndrome, going outside and trying to keep as active on your good days is really important as well. And you know, types of diabetes and cardiovascular disease we've talked about already, but movement, gardening is really good exercise, and people need to remember that. You know, when I say to people, it's so easy to say the generic stuff, which is, you know, you should be doing 30 minutes of exercise 5 times a week to get your heart rate up and out of puff, but it doesn't necessarily apply to that person. So if they really enjoy gardening or are thinking about gardening, you know, if you say to them, you know, 30 minutes of gardening is really good exercise, you know, they will spend far more than, you know as much as I do. You start off spending 30 minutes, but it's 3 hours later and you're like, oh gosh, where's the time gone? Yes, I'm definitely prescribing gardening for people, and I encourage other healthcare professionals to do the same as well.
No, that's brilliant. And it makes me laugh thinking of you having consultations in your surgery, because when our garden is open, people either talk to me about health or plants. So it's the same for me. Yes. And you, but I don't have any of the answers to their health issues.
It's the same with me and gardening. I just try my luck at it, and it usually works.
Maybe we need like a permanent Zoom camera so you can solve my customers' health problems. But it is what I find so wonderful when the garden is open, is we have people that come on their own, we have people that are widowed, or we have people that are ill that come. And we've had people visit who are terminally ill, and it's their last visit with their friends somewhere beautiful. And oh, wow. It really is. I mean, I don't know how you do your job, because I'm normally weeping by the time they've explained why they're at the garden. Emotionally, you must be exhausted a lot of the time though.
Yeah, definitely. You know, it is at the end of each day, you are emotionally exhausted, because you've often seen 40 patients at 10 minute intervals, and each one of them has got, you know, a story in itself. And in and amongst all of them, there will be some minor illnesses as well. But the vast majority have got a lot going on. And you're absolutely right. People come to gardens, you know, to feel better. I went down to near London somewhere, and I opened up a garden, a hospital garden, and the purpose of the garden, they'd had it all revamped, it was all through charity, and the purpose of the garden was to bring people who were having cancer treatment out into the outdoors. And they had a specific room. They built this whole kind of outdoor room with glass all around it for patients who wanted to spend their last kind of day or last few hours you know, looking at the garden. And I just thought that was immense. It was just immense. It felt amazing, and to see all the effort that had gone in, it just goes to show the healing power of gardens, and the tranquility and the serenity it brings people, even when they're feeling their worst.
Well, let's hope, you know, that is something that we'll see more of, is gardens in hospitals. But really, before I let you go and do your run around the garden or go and mow your mother's lawn, how will you look back on this time? You know, if you were writing a letter to your future self about the lockdown, what would be, you know, the things that you've learnt from it personally?
Personally, I would say when you are feeling stressed or upset or anxious, speak to people. I let that anxiety around the red zones go on for far too long before I spoke to anyone. And you know, when embrace those feelings, don't shy away from them. And if you need help, just ask for help. That is key. I've been lucky enough not to have any mental health issues up until this period of anxiety I had. And I'm constantly telling people to talk about their feelings, but it was so hard to do it myself. And that would be a big take home point from me. If I could do it all over again, I would talk to someone much, much sooner.
But the plus side is that you now know how awful that feeling is. Mm. So when people come to you, you can empathise and kind of get your head round.
I certainly can. And I will also tell people about my experience there as well, because I think patients, when they know that the person they're talking to has gone through something, maybe not as severe as what they're going through, but something similar, you know, will probably respond to my advice better as well.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I really hope you continue to share the excitement of your garden and your life. And what I love about it is you just make the garden seem a place to have fun. You don't need to be a gardening expert. You can just use it to run around. You don't need to grow potatoes necessarily.
Definitely.
So thank you for that. And I think you're doing us all the power of good.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And thank you for having me. I've had a wonderful time.
Well, it's been great. All right. Speak to you again. Hopefully see you at Chelsea Flower Show or a gardening show at some point in
the future. Oh, yes, definitely. Definitely. I will see you then.
Yeah, fantastic.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, I'm sure you'll agree that Dr. Amir Khan is just such an inspiration. I couldn't agree with him more that gardening is the medicine that we need. So take a leaf out of his book, start jogging around your garden and making the most out of your outside space.
Fresh from the Pod is presented by me, Tamsin Westhorpe, and produced by Candide in their plant-filled Bristol office. Candide is a free plant and gardening app with a helpful community of plant lovers, interesting articles and great tools like plant identification and garden tours. Ask a question in the app with the hashtag #FreshFromThePod and I'll choose my favourite to answer later in the series. And if you enjoyed Fresh From The Pod, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts, share it on Reddit and talk about it with your friends. And don't forget to subscribe.